Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Fetsi Nkwepi, who is the program manager for clinical trials and research at Right to Care. A very, very good morning to you. How are you?
I'm good, Howard. How are you doing today?
I am well, thank you. So all of a sudden, most of us have now become experts at this. You know, thanks to Facebook, we now have our virology certification, and we also experts on which medication to use. But the problem is, we don't really obviously know what it is that we're talking about, because we don't know how these trials are conducted. And in fact, somebody sent me something yesterday. There were 81 people were using whatever product it was, and they say, you see, this is a breakthrough. Well, it actually isn't, because it wasn't a proper trial. Take us through the concept of clinical trials.
Thanks, Sam, for having me, Howard. The concept of clinical trials, just to put it simply, is medical research that involves people where we want to find out the drug or an intervention, because it could also be surgical, it could also be something else. If that works, that is to put it simply. But there are obviously more details that go into that, into how they get conducted, how they get designed, how they get scientifically validated to make sure that the outcome can stand up to scrutiny through peer review and through public review. So through all those review mechanisms, one can reproduce the results and one can safely say this drug is really working for this and that condition. So clinical trials are research studies performed in people and are aimed at evaluating a medical, physical, or behavioral intervention. They are really the primary way that researchers find out if a drug or diet or medical device is safe and effective to use in people.
Sorry, carry on.
Well, I was just going to go into a little bit more detail.
No, do that, yeah. I'd be interested to hear.
So when we do clinical trials, first of all, we really try to find out if a molecule or a medical intervention works in a setting where we don't use people yet, and those are early development studies. Then when we are ready and we have determined to some degree the safety of a intervention or a drug, let me just refer to a drug in this instance, then we go into human involvement, and there are four phases that are involved in it. One phase, the first phase is where we use only healthy volunteers and we make sure that it's safe. The second phase, we use a larger group of people with the disease under consideration, and we also still look at safety, but the focus now becomes on whether the drug works, that is efficacy. And the third phase, we use a lot more people and we tend to want to know more about the drug in that phase so that we can be able to submit the data and the evidence to health authorities to register the drug for the broader community use.
Right. And what are the steps, what is needed before it goes from laboratory testing to human testing?
Before it goes into human testing, you have to have the evidence in place that shows that it is going to be safe, that shows that it is potentially going to work in a real-life setting. And before you can even start using human, obviously submit all that data to health regulatories as well as ethics committees that would evaluate that data to say, okay, this can proceed to human use.
How do you manage the ethical side of it? Given that in many parts of the world where people are incredibly poor, impoverished, it might be a reasonable way for people to earn income to become part of a trial. But ultimately, if that becomes the focus, then we live in a world where we're testing drugs only on those who are disempowered, even though they're being paid for it. How do we balance that?
So what we do is, as I mentioned earlier, we seek authorization from ethics committees. So we have very well-established ethics committees in South Africa, mm-hmm. and have some central and institutional ones, but they would make a determination based on the informed consent process that you submit to them, that this is how we are going to make sure that people who get involved in clinical trials are well informed, they know what they're getting into, and we stress to a very big degree or a large degree that the compensation that they get is really reimbursement for specific things like travel, for specific things like time out of office that you were not able to earn a living if you were working. If you're not working, we make sure that whatever we do does not get done at your expense. That's basically what we do. We really don't pay people to be insurance and trust, but we give them all the information that they need to make an informed decision to get into a clinical trial, and along the way, then we reimburse them for expenses incurred during the process. And that gets approved by ethics committees as well as the health regulatory authority.
And do these ethics committees or do the ethics guidelines differ significantly from country to country?
They do not. We have a global document that we call International Conference on Harmonization, ICH DCP guidelines, which DCP just basically good clinical practice guidelines. These guidelines are followed by all researchers globally, and this have been agreed that anybody, doesn't matter where you are in China or South Africa or in the US, you follow these guidelines. And these guidelines are endorsed by various regulatory authorities throughout the world. Japan will use this guideline. The UK will use this guideline. The US, South Africa. So they are internationally accepted that this is good clinical practice and these are the guidelines we follow when we do clinical trials.
Right. And there we do have to leave it. Fetse Nkwepe, who is the program manager for clinical trials and research at Right to Care. Thank you for that. Fascinating conversation and very enlightening for me.